that is a good segue into exactly what you are and what you do as a activist musician. So tell us a little bit about what you understand in the history of what we would call activist musicians.
There is a lot of history. Activism in music goes way, way back. It isn't just something that, you know, magically appeared in the 1960s for the Vietnam War. Woody Guthrie, who many of us think of as, I guess, the founding father or something of this kind of stuff, but Woody was basically a contemporary of Pete Seeger, and Pete's still around, still singing and still active. So we're not going back too far when we just go back to Woody Guthrie. Woody, for anybody who doesn't know, spent his life, which unfortunately was a short one, traveling around the country and singing in union halls and community groups and street corners and anywhere he could. Most of the time, he didn't have any extra money at all. He was lucky if somebody would give him, it was the sing for your supper kind of deal.
Huh.
He would crash with the people that he visited as he went around the country, if he could find somebody. Otherwise, you know, you'd find somebody who's now an internationally known figure. In those days, you probably could find him sleeping in a doorway.
Hmm.
I've seen plenty of signs that, some of the old photographs, you know, where it'd be a handwritten sign in a kind of unsteady scrawl, which he obviously wrote himself, saying, good folk music tonight or something. Woody Guthrie plays his guitar. But going back to answer your question, over the years, from the very beginning, music had not just a mating and dating aspect,
right,
but it also had a political aspect. There were things called the broadside ballads, and these are some of the earliest collected pieces of music that we have. Most people know about the child ballads. There was a professor named Child who did Old English and some other Scotch and Irish things, but primarily English ballads that were passed down by the oral tradition before anybody had a way of recording music and before anybody was writing music down. And in those days, some of those songs were political, and they were also, these broadside ballads that came a little later, were the way that people would get the news, and they would also get often exhortations to some sort of action, as well as the news. So somebody would be able to go into the town and perhaps blow some sort of a horn. It might be a homemade kind of affair made out of a shell or something. You know, mm-hmm. We're talking about way back when. And they would get people's attention, and people would gather around. And instead of just saying, you know, look over the hill, here comes the enemy, they would sing something. They would say, you know, here's the news, and they'd have a rhyme, and they'd sing something about an important thing that happened, the daughter of the king was kidnapped or whatever,
right?
And then they'd often would have some kind of a part of their song where they'd encourage people to take action. So this goes back, and it's interesting to see how the use of music politically has gone on over the years. In areas that are outside of maybe what you and I and our immediate friends might think would be good things to use music for, we sort of think of music, at least I always did, as a nice thing and something that empowers and encourages people. And it can be, but, you know, these politicos and corporate CEOs and spin doctors and advertisers have also found it to be very effective to sell their wares, and they also are afraid of it.
Huh.
In Pennsylvania, back in 1927, when there were some big coal strikes going on, one of the courts there issued an injunction saying that it was illegal for anybody to sing within a certain distance of a coal mine.
Wow.
Because they were afraid. They knew that the music was powerful.
Wow.
And they know it persuades people. And more recently, I think it was 2004, a pretty scary thing happened, at least for most of us. Some white supremacist groups got together, and they unleashed something with the name Operation Schoolyard. And the Operation Schoolyard program was designed to give away 100,000 CDs, to give them away, full of racist music, to try to get new followers for white supremacy. And we all know, or many of us have seen stories of these political musicians that are tortured or killed. One of the most famous was Victor Jara, when the military junta seized power in Chile in 1973. They rounded everybody up and put them in a stadium, and Victor Jara was tortured and killed for his music. His wife tells the story of exactly what they did to him, and it's not really something you want to hear, but right. You just know that
it wasn't
they
good.
took it seriously. And one of the favorite quotes that I think a lot of people have heard, but there's always somebody that didn't hear it, so I'll say it again. It's from the 1940s, and it was Hermann Göring, who was one of the leading Nazis. He stole this actually from a play, I understand, and changed it slightly, but he used to say this all the time, according to the historians. When I hear the word culture, I reach for my gun.
Wow.
So we know that music can affect people. Otherwise, these major advertisers also wouldn't be where money counts and all they want to do is sell stuff. They wouldn't be all having sing-along ads for their products, everything from soda to to a car.
Right.
They all have jingles.
Right.
And often they steal our song, or at least they get what happens is usually the musicians, a lot of the 60s musicians are really upset because much of their music has been used for ads.
Right.
And they don't have any control over that because in those days almost everybody had to sign the rights over to the record company or some management company. So they got to sing the songs and they got to write them, but they couldn't really control what happened to them. So now these business guys are able to license the songs to the likes of some multinational corporation that wants to use the last decade's peace song as a some kind of a product like cigarettes.
Wow. My guest today is Ray Corona, the founder and the big guy in the Ray Corona Band, and we're talking about activist musicians.
There's a story going around that Barry Kornhauser actually founded the band. He wanted to be in a band that was called the Ray Corona Band, and he didn't know anybody by that name. So he just pulled out a big phone book and eventually found me, and that's how we got started.
Oh, I thought you were going to say if he called information and asked for Ray Corona in Jersey City.
Hey, you know that. You're slick. You could start a band too.
No. No, I couldn't.
No. Well,
Although, my last year in high school, I did belong to a band. We used to play up in the Heights.
Oh, great.
The Jersey City Heights. And I was on the organ. It was like, this really primitive electric organ.
Oh, just like the Doors.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun.
Nice.
But we never played for anybody. We just practiced.
Well, practicing is important, too.
It sure is.